Okay, right. Water.
Check.
Apples.
Check.
Tommy Gurgle's emergency cushion tummy pusher.
Check.
Mike.
Check.
Mac.
Check.
Is it all plugged in?
Check.
Switched on?
Check.
Did you rescan for audio devices?
Check.
Got the script?
Check.
Read the script?
Read the script several times. I even highlighted my part.
Saucy. Did you gargle? Marvellous. Warm up like this. And like this. One smart fellow, he felt smart.
One smart fellow, he felt smart. One smart fellow, he smelt fart. One smart...
Great!
We're ready!
Yeah!
Yeah.
Pub?
Pub.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Fiona.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about acting in audio drama.
Hooray! Who'd want to do that?
Oh, goodness knows. If anyone out there is considering starting acting in audio, what kind of things do you think they ought to consider, Sarah?
You're asking me? Okay, well, I think it's probably best to have at least some confidence in your speaking ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are different types of voice actor for me.
Mm.
Like there's the person, for example, like I would think that I would be in the bracket of,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of the character actress, multi-accented type person.
Yes.
And I think there's lots of types, but the ones I come across most are these. And then there's the person who generally plays the same type of character all the time, but is brilliant at doing that.
The kind of Humphrey Bogart of the the audience.
Yeah, yes. I wish I could do an impression of him, but I can't. but yeah, I don't know who that was. Jimmy Cagney? No, it wasn't even him. But yeah, I just, I think, first of all, yes, it's being able to obviously read a script fluently and bring it to life.
Yeah.
And people on various forums and in my life and me as well, have always had things where they've been told maybe, oh, you're good at voices, you should try it. And I think that's definitely one element of being a voice actor. But it's also currently, I do feel, about having the confidence to actually push it further than just thinking about it. So initially, just to say what I've done, I have had the acting bug for a very long time, many decades. I'm 22 inside and that's how I'm going to stay. And I...
that old.
Basically, And the main thing that I wanted to do for a very long time is just, yes, use these wares of voices that I seem to have been able to use in various theatrical productions and to just get involved in this world of amazing radio, which I've been listening to for, again, a very, very long time, and all sorts of different tropes and types and genres of radio programmes, and very recently a lot more online as the iTunes kind of world and the podcasting world has kind of revved and revved even more so in the last sort of 10 years to produce some brilliant things. So I got my reel done on advice and after speaking to the lovely Kareem, who lives near me. Hello, Kareem. Cromfley,
hello.
Who I was in some plays with locally here. He was directing one of a pair of one-act plays. I was in the other one, and so I knew him from there. And so, yes, I got my reel done and then just started to tout that about a bit in the nicest possible way, and from there I basically started to link up with people mainly on Facebook and on a site called Voices Pro, and just really got my first kind of taster of it doing a few things for a wonderful chap called Tony Lunn, and did some Galaxy Quest fun written by the wonderful Dave Mack. And and it kind of snowballed from there into all of the amazingly fun projects that I've done since. And, you know, I've been really challenged by the plots that I've been given.
Cool.
and enjoyed myself immensely. So how about you?
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, something I thought that you said there that's quite important is, if your main thing is voices, then of course you can go into impressionism or something like that, especially if you have a very flexible
What are you going to say? What are you going to say? Oh, right.
Oh, okay. Something flexible. Bits. But if you also want to look at the acting side of things as well as just the vocal flexibility, then actually what you're saying, doing other acting experience is a really good idea, even if it isn't audio acting experience. So if you can join a amateur dramatic group near you.
Yes, they'll need you, especially men. They need you, boys.
Oh, yes. And classes, that kind of thing. Or even just auditioning for things, in a way, is always good experience, isn't it? It's always, you always end up learning new voices each time because you've got to work on something new if you're not Humphrey Bogart.
Which we all are a little bit inside, yeah.
At the end of the day, a little whiskey and we're there.
But what do you think are the most fun things about voice acting? Like, why have you chosen to, as well as producing, do that as part of your kind of career path right now?
I find the fact that we're kind of on Earth, well, I'm going to go to deep now. We're only on Earth once. Although, of course, that may vary. Who knows, you know. But the idea of just having one life and one character, especially if, you know, if you've got my character, is quite boring.
No, I don't believe it.
You know what I mean? I really love the fact that since going into it, you know, you can play so many amazing characters. I mean, I've played sort of a, I think, almost 7 foot nun down to various, all sorts of different creatures, even, you know, birds and beasts and all sorts of things. It's playing, isn't it? It's like being a kid again, and you get an actual license to do that. It's brilliant. What more could you possibly ask for?
And I find that being a mum as I am, and currently balancing the teaching and real life family whiffery duties, whatever they may be.
Whiffery? Do you whiffle?
Only on a Sunday. But yeah, I do think with, you know, with my life as it is, this fits in beautifully. I have this set up in my house and I can do it around that. Whereas, you know, theatrically, if you're involved in something, you rehearse for weeks and if not months, perhaps even half a year to produce something that's on for 4 nights. Whereas you can do something, you know, over a course of a couple of weeks in your house that gets heard as many times as it's played. So I think that's really exciting to think that, you know, something you've been involved in is far reaching. People all over this crazy globe. I think that's really very fun.
It's quite amazing, actually, isn't it, really?
It is, and accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I love it. I love it because, yes, the absolute diversity. I mean, like you, I've played things from space alien creatures of the future to little toddlers, and accents-wise, have been really stretched, which is really quite fun, and I love that. I think I had only ever attempted Russian as a joke, but now maybe my accent is a joke, and apologies to anyone who is from any of the countries I ever try to do. But yeah, I do try my best, and I do take it seriously, you know, and I think, as a voice actor, it's very interesting when you get a role how much kind of research that I would do before I kick off on something is sometimes quite a lot, depending on how naturally that accent comes to me. And so, yeah, I don't know about you. What can you cite some particularly fun voice acting experiences you've had of late?
Yeah, there was there was a book that I was doing which involved
It wasn't a saucy book.
No, not this time. No, it was a book that involved three main characters, one of whom was from New York, one of whom was from Russia, and one from the UK. And there was one particular sentence which had three different languages in it. So that one sentence, I think I spent more time on that, getting the languages right, than I did the half the book. But when it's like that, I really, really love doing that research. I found there are some amazing sites online, actually. There's one called Internet Accent Archive, which we'll put a link to, which is a fantastic resource for accents. or you can even go to find podcasts in the country, the accent of which you're doing. I did one where I was using Swansea accents, and I actually found the easiest way to find a range of them was to listen to a football podcast, which was narrated by lots of people from various parts of Wales.
Amazing.
And I'm not even into football, but it was really...
I bet you are. You were imagining them in their lovely tight shorts, weren't you? I know you were.
It was really useful. So you could do that kind of thing as well. Any other resources you've used?
Well, I think just from citing examples of specific things. So generally, producers have perhaps contacted me and said, could you do it like this? And they'd send me a list of people to listen to rather than things. So I think if ever you're in doubt, it's probably worth asking your director, producer, whoever's running the gig to just maybe give you a few pointers as to where to look if you're not quite sure, or if you want to suggest some, say, is this the kind of style you're after, and they can say yes or no. So otherwise, no, it is just a hunt around for specific character types, really. And other than the ones you've mentioned, just look into specific people from film, TV, audio or theatre that, have the same kind of lilts and traits.
That's a good idea as well. Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. Also one for specific words, if there's a word you can't pronounce.
Yes.
Forvo,
yes,
is really good for that.
Yes.
Again, we'll put the link on the website.
Yeah, I still can't say earlier in American. I got a script this week and that's like the third word, and I thought, no, this is daunting me, this word. Yeah, other than that, I think, how do you find your new projects, or do they find you?
Well, there are places that you can go online. It's a really good point. I haven't done so much recently because I've been working more on audio books, but actually I'd like to reach my tendrils out a bit. And there are places like Audio Drama Auditions on Facebook. You mentioned...
There's Casting Call Pro, which does films and TV. I've done a student film through that. Please never watch it.
Oh, no.
And I've done, a few things through Casting Call Pro and a few through Voices Pro. And, I find that's more fun for just being able to list what I've done rather than be as proactive as I'd like in auditioning. Because that's the thing. I think currently I don't have time to audition for things that pay well because I'm doing so much fun stuff that I'm doing for free. Ooh, I'm a complete nutter like that. What's going on? I think there are quite a few sites. I think there's Behind the Voice Actors, isn't there? And there's a few things that come up on there that are quite fun sometimes.
And on most social media as well, there will be a group or a forum or a thread or a chat room that will be designed about auditions. So keep your eyes peeled and you will definitely find something to kick you off if you're beginning.
Yeah, and there's other things, wasn't there, on Facebook. So there's Women in Podcasting as well, which is another site to have a look at. And you don't have to be a woman to be a member of that.
No, definitely not.
It's just looking at women-centric things, but anyone can contribute. I think it's quite an interesting way as well of auditioning these days. A lot of the things I do, I do quite cheekily sometimes. If I've heard of something that I really like, I do throw my reel at a producer and say, if there's a Sarah-shaped voice in here that you need, I do this and I'm quite happy to play, kind of thing. But I found that actually to be quite a fun way of just, having a bit of banter, as it's called, with people who are working and producing. And just even getting involved in various sites as well, and just making your personality trait, I suppose, known on various sites, so people might know your name or see your name or think, oh, I've heard of that person, hopefully for a good reason and not because you're annoying. Like, that wouldn't happen, would it?
No. But actually, as well, you said when you did your voice reel, you approached Kareem.
Yeah.
And that's also a really good idea. If you're starting out, not that you're starting out, but if you are starting out, particularly with the audio side, you do want your voice reel to sound good quality.
Professional, yeah, I paid for mine, absolutely, yeah. And that's what you have to, I think you have to pay out, you know, a good, it's got to be over 100 quid at least, I'd imagine, these days. I think mine was about 150, something like that. And what happens there is you get sent scripts in advance, and if you don't ask for it, because you're paying for stuff, so, you know, look at what you're going to be reading and get a chance to get the feel of the kind of styles of things that you're doing. I was asked if I'd liked to, I could provide my own things, which I did, that showcased the kind of style of voices that I can do. And then that's all professionally mixed by whoever's going to produce it for you. So it sounds, you know, beautiful, and mics wise and everything else. It's probably done with some top end gear because you're in a studio. So that's much better than recording it on your phone in your room, just as a top tip, really.
Definitely.
I think auditions wise as well, you know, if you're going to take it seriously, it is worth getting yourself the basic setup kit, and you can check out previous episodes of this show just to fathom what Matthew and Robert suggested, which is still kind of pretty much what I've got, actually. I don't know what you're working with, but yes, I basically have an SSE C mic plugged into my Scarlett 212 into a MacBook. So yeah, it's all very simple on the stand with one of those foamy things that I can't remember the word for right now, and speaking to you from under my duvet. Yeah,
actually, yes, that's a really good point about treating your space. You could have the most wonderful microphone in the world that can basically pick up woodworm breaking wind, but it will pick up the woodworm breaking wind. So you have to make sure that the space that you're in is as well treated as possible to stop reflections and sound getting in and so on. So in a way as well, yeah, do spend as much time again researching that. And again, you can go back to Matthew and Robert's brilliant episodes on all of that, as much as that as you do in getting the equipment as well. You're presenting yourself in the best way you can.
Yes. And talking of equipment,
yeah.
Obviously as a voice actor, your equipment is in your body. So it's very important to look after yourself. I've seen posts of people who, you know, aren't eating properly, aren't drinking properly. And the whole thing of being hydrated enough before you're doing any auditioning or work on a longer script. I think they say at least 2 hours beforehand, have a good litre or so of water and then top yourself up as you go along. Try to prevent any gurgles. I find I have my favourite pillow of joy or cushion of joy just near me in case I am having a very gurgly tummy and it needs to be covered. Just put a pillow over your tummy. It's one of the top tips I learned quite quickly. But I think the main thing is that for producers, they'd like you to try and eliminate as many clicks and pops that your mouth are going to make as possible.
Definitely, because that is the most time-consuming. Well, if it's a puff of wind, it's nigh on impossible to get rid of. So definitely use a pop screen of some sort.
Yes.
And actually, we'll put up on the website as well, Stephen J. Cohen wrote an amazing guide to how to place your microphone.
Yes.
Which we'll put a link to too.
Yes. And they generally say, don't they, if you do the kind of Hawaii hello sign, so extend your little finger and your thumb and then kind of put that to your pop shield and to your chin, and you should be at least kind of that far away from the mic, and any more is going to be perhaps less effective. Depends what you're doing, but generally for just speaking kind of dialogue, normal dialogue, yes, that's apparently the recommended place to be, because if you get too close it gets a bit scary, which is what I just did then, Fiona, if you weren't quite sure. So we've got some fun people to we've spoken to, haven't we? Some really fun people in the world of voice acting. We were very excited to hear from the lovely Erica Sanderson, who I used to work with when I was in theatre production. I was an education coordinator, and she was one of my amazingly talented actress workshop leaders. And we've reconnected recently, and she is, amongst other things, one of the main voices on the No Sleep podcast, which I'm sure a few of you have heard of. And who else did we speak to?
We spoke to David Alt as well.
Lucky thing.
Yeah. He's a wonderful, very interesting person. And Yeah, I first knew him from listening to Byron, actually. He was on that. And I've also worked with him in the past, and he's a friend as well in real life. And he's a, really, really interesting interview,
Does he get around in, though? Does he?
No, he does. He's in loads of stuff. He has a very interesting approach, which is a different one.
To voice acting, yeah. Fascinating, actually,
I'd say
he's amazing. I would call him amazing voice acting. He's prolific, kind of everywhere.
Absolutely, yeah.
And finally, we traipsed across London and had all sorts of fun adventures locating the amazing Beth Eyre. Beth, yes. Fresh of Beth Eyre. I've never thought about that before. So, yes, we had a lovely chat to Beth.
And she, again, was just brilliant, and I hope you'll really enjoy all the things she has to say.
So here they are. Enjoy it.
I have the absolute delight to interview now David Ault, star of, many, many things. David, welcome to the show. Do you want to tell us a bit about where people can hear you?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say it's actually the absolute delight is mine, because Fiona, I've known you for a long time, and I came to your wedding.
You did?
And it's wonderful to reconnect via Skype and doing this interview. So, yes, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. So, as for where people can hear me, well, the No Sleep podcast is one of the main things that I do at the moment. That's produced by David Cummings in Toronto and is an amazing family of people that produce some brilliant audio horror fiction. Reaching back, so the Byron Chronicles over at Darker Projects, now at Eric Busby Presents. You can hear me at Colonial Radio Theatre on the Air, the Sonic Society, and various audiobooks and bits of e-learning and things like that.
Cool. And I'm sure many people will have heard you in some of those things. You have done a lot of audio drama
over the centuries. Yes, centuries, thanks. I do have a habit of popping up in different places. And one of my favourites recently has been in a Scottish podcast.
Hooray.
Where I got people on Twitter saying, "Is that David Ault? I think that's David Ault." I was like, yes, it's me.
Yes, that's done by two Scottish guys. I can't remember their names at all.
Matthew McLean and...
Cudmore,
yes.
Of course, who are the fathers of this podcast.
Yes, and in fact, I was interviewed by you in that as well.
Of course.
It seems to be quite a familiar setup.
Yes, a little more formally probably there and a little more professionally. Yes.
This one's a little less scripted.
Exactly. So tell us about what acting training have you had?
I guess I started acting sort of properly on stage, when I was in my early teens, when I was part of the church pantomime. And that very first one, I was Father Bear, so I got to dress up in a bear costume, and that was fun. and it's sort of gone from there, really. It was before, because I started being interested in audio drama when I used to listen to CDs, cassettes and things as I was going to sleep as a child. And that sort of attuned me to the audio drama medium, so that when in sort of 2003, 2004, I was looking online for Doctor Who audio dramas, because I'm a big fan of Doctor Who, I found a few groups, and one of those in particular was Darker Projects, and I joined the group, and then they put out an audition call for, or not even an audition call, just, "Can someone do these two lines of Slip, Jump, Engaged, Captain?" And that's where it all started in terms of audio drama. It was a couple of years after that that I did go to drama school, but we didn't do anything specifically aimed at the audio medium. Mm-hmm. It was very much more for stage. So, I've done some training from that, which I've brought into my work, but mainly I just sort of pick it up and see what works.
Cool. And do you use any of the warm-up techniques that you learnt for stage for voice acting, or do you use something specific when you're just about to read?
This is where I'm going to sound utterly unprofessional, but I don't actually warm up.
Oh.
Yes, this is... what I generally do is leave my recording until later on in the day when I've had a chance to talk, have some tea, mm-hmm. And then that's when I start doing my recording. I probably should do warm-ups and things like that, but I'm very lazy. and in fact, you may well ask later about techniques for doing scripts, and I don't go through scripts and mark where I'm going to do beats and things like that. Nope.
That was my next question, actually. Right. Okay. So you're coming to this quite kind of fresh, I guess. Or...
Yes. One thing that I did take away from drama school, and it sort of helped when it's doing monologues and stories, is that I don't read the end. And in general, I like to discover the story as I'm reading it, rather than know the story, know the ending, to then inform the rest of the story. The reason is that I was told off at drama school for knowing the end of the monologue.
Right.
And if I know that I'm going to be going to my death or execution or something, then that will sort of layer into the rest of the text. But if I don't know that yet, then... I shouldn't be communicating that. I know it sounds a bit strange, and I'm probably not explaining it tremendously well, but it's essentially a character may well not know the future and the outcome, and therefore shouldn't be telegraphing that ahead of time. So, yes, I don't like to read scripts ahead.
That's fascinating. That is a very different technique. Yeah.
Yes. Because I like listening to stories and being surprised.
Mm.
And if I can experience that with the listener, then in many ways that's a more authentic way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my view on things, and it seems to work okay.
Yeah, that is a fascinating approach.
Yeah, a couple of times where I have looked ahead in a script, it's very difficult to think, well, I know what's coming next, and so that's why I don't want to know what's coming next.
Wow, that's very, that puts a lot of pressure on the moment, though. It's almost like you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. But you enjoy that feeling.
I do. I love it. Mm. And I love that sense of discovery. But I think it also means that I trust the writers.
Yeah.
Because when writing is good, then the flow, the voice actor or the actor is merely just a mouthpiece for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sense where the cadences happen, where the excitement is ramped up or dialed back. It's all there in the writing, which is something that comes from the Shakespeare classes that I did at drama school. It's all there. I don't need to put anything into it. I just need to let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are... So, for example, in the Scottish podcast, I know that Matthew had gone through a couple of iterations of the long monologue that I had in the finale. And if you haven't listened to it already, go and listen to a Scottish podcast, because it's a fantastic podcast.
It is indeed.
And not just for me. But his writing was so good that it just lent itself immediately to the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And all I needed to do is just stick it there, and everything just went up and down in exactly the way it needed to, because the writing was so good.
Yeah.
And I've done some e-learning, for example, where there's some e-learning which is very much written to be heard, but there's some which is not. And it is a struggle to read every single word.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's very much a matter of good writing. It requires nothing from the voice actor but to be a mouthpiece.
And talking of that, most of the voice acting that you do, am I right in saying that you're doing it remotely in a satellite way?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. So how much preparation do you get, or sort of feedback do you get from producers or directors?
None.
None.
it's In terms of feedback, some writers will write how they want a line to be spoken.
Mm-hmm. Do you like that? Do you like that? No?
Occasionally, it's helpful for a bit of clarification.
Mm.
And especially in an audio drama where things are changing for the characters all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those times where you really don't want to be telegraphing things ahead if you know your character is going to wind up dead or something at the end of the episode. You're not going to foreshadow that with a layer of doom while everything's going on.
Sure.
So sometimes it helps for clarification where there might be subtext for a character. So if the character needs to say this in a particular way to communicate the subtext rather than just what is there, then it's helpful for the writer to say, do this subtly or do this with a slight hint of anger in the voice, blah, blah, blah. But in general, like I say, good writing communicates that without needing to be signposted.
Sure.
So I don't think it's needed if you've got a good writer.
And in some of the shows that you have been in, you have done quite a lot of monologues. And I was just wondering, do you approach them any differently from the dialogue that you're sending in? And if you have a long one, if you're sending it in remotely, do you record the whole thing several times or break it up? Or how do you do it?
Usually when I'm doing a monologue, so say, for example, with the Scottish podcast monologue, mm-hmm. or indeed any of the Byron monologues, I will just record it straight through and send that in. If I go back, it'll be because as I'm speaking it, I'll think, no, I didn't get that right, or I stumble over something, as everyone does.
Of course.
but I don't tend to record it multiple times. I'll record it once and say, if I've got this wrong, please tell me, and I will re-record it. With long monologues, sometimes people don't want to listen to it more than once, especially for an editor. So, yes, where there is any ambiguity in a sentence in terms of whether I should phrase it as a question or not, or whatever, I will maybe do that sentence twice, once in one way and once in another, to give the option. But the rest of it, I rely on the writers, and there are fantastic writers out there that I've had I'm very honoured to have worked with.
How do you find work? How do you market yourself, or do you contact producers? Or
I don't. I would love to have an agent, someone who's out there and getting work for me. But you've not been tempted to get one. I've tried. And people don't seem to be all that interested in audio artists. And whilst I have a background in stage as well, I haven't got anything in TV, apart from Most Haunted. But that was only a very short vox pop. I don't have an agent. I would love one. If anyone is listening and would like to get me some work, that would be great. Thank you. I talk to people on Twitter in a friendly way, but I've never really marketed myself. People just send me an email and say, would you mind doing XYZ in this?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, yes, thank you for asking nicely. I'd be happy to.
So it's kind of based on your reputation from them listening to you in other things, I guess.
And Pretty much, yes.
And do you have another job around your voice work? And what do you do and how do you balance?
So I'm a tutor, private tutor in maths, physics, chemistry, biology. It's maths and sciences, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not as a teacher. I don't want the level of commitment and whatnot, and paperwork and lack of holidays or lack of cheap holidays that being a teacher would entail. So, yes, I'm a private tutor, which means I go round to people's houses and teach them about maths and physics and so forth. That generally happens during the afternoon, evening. Mm-hmm. So that allows me to get all of my other work done in the normal working hours when most people are out of their houses.
Well, so that balances quite well. It's quite flexible.
It does. Yeah. Yes. yes.
And do you network with other voice actors? Do you?
Well, I chat with them. I have, I have good fun chatting to them on Slack, Twitter, etc. I'm not on Facebook, so I can't do it there. But yeah, but networking per se, in the sort of strict go out for drinks and have business cards handy, no, I don't. Yes, when I was reading the questions that you sent ahead of of this interview, I was looking through and I was thinking, well, I don't look through scripts. I don't do networking. I don't have an agent. I don't do all these things. I must sound like a really unprofessional person.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Here I am going to be talking about voice acting, and I just get a microphone and do it. There's nothing.
Well, you do it very well.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, I must have just sounded like Boris Johnson then, so I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, I know you do all sorts of politicians. That's fine. So do you mainly record from home, and what kind of setup do you have? What kind of equipment do you use?
I do mostly record from home. There's one set of e-learning I do where I go up to Newcastle that's a company called GCSE Pod, and that's for people, young people who are 15 and 16 doing their exams. It breaks down into sort of podcast form various things about the set text they might be studying, or the science, or RS, etc. All of the subjects they might be doing in podcast revision kind of form. So that's one I go for remotely, for studio working. It's a little sound booth inside an office. So you can't really call it a studio, like studio per se. But yes, otherwise I record from home. I am currently sitting in my bedroom on the bed, and I have an old speaker cabinet that has been filled with acoustic foam and a USB mic. It's a Rode USB mic. So it's a very good, very simple microphone, and that is my home setup, which probably sounds a bit strange, but it works for me. And that's pretty much sums up the way that I approach voice acting.
No, that's fine.
It works.
Yes, that's the main thing. Absolutely. And finally, would you recommend to somebody, we do have new people listening to this podcast, as well as
welcome everyone, welcome.
Hello. Would you recommend to them a voice actor's life? What do you enjoy or not?
Well, I think the individual lives are somewhat different, but doing voiceovers and voice acting, I love it. I get to be so many different people. And work with so many amazing writers, producers, other actors that, yes, I think it's great fun. In terms of why you might not want to be a voice actor, it's made me very aware of noise and listening into things very, very closely. And I certainly noticed aeroplanes and dogs and cars and things like that. I think it's probably made me a little bit oversensitive to that. But yes, I think it's great fun for the variety of roles that you can have and the variety of people you can work with. One of them, my audio wife on the No Sleep podcast, Erica Sanderson, she is incredible. She has got such a broad range of voices, so that she could be a young American boy in one story and an old Russian woman in another and everything in between. It provides a flexibility of character that you just wouldn't get on stage.
Yeah.
So, yes, I've been God, the devil, Jesus, various prophets, and a whole load of things in between.
And then when you're acting, you also, yeah.
So, yes, it's voice acting is brilliant and I love it.
Yeah. And would you give is there any advice you would give to someone wanting to start out?
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just grab a mic and do it, because that's how I started. You don't need huge setups. You don't need tons of investment. I think in many ways, voice acting is a bit like cycling. You see people going cycling who've got all decked out in Lycra and all of the bits and bobs that they feel that they have to do, when in fact all you need is two wheels and a handlebar and a saddle, and you can do everything that everyone else does. You just don't have to show off the exact tone of your body. I'm very much against Lycra. So. Yes. So if you are thinking of doing voice acting, grab a mic and do it and enjoy it. And it's become so easy for anyone to make a podcast, to make audio stuff. There's free sound effects everywhere, free music. You can make your own audio drama, and there are places like the Sonic Society where your work can be shown. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a story inside you, then let that story free. Mm-hmm. and make it happen.
Thank you. It's been a real joy talking to you, David. Thank you very much indeed.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Fiona.
Before we go, where can people get hold of you if they want to?
Right, so my website is davidalt.co.uk. Mm-hmm. Or you can find me on Twitter at AstroTour2010. So, or just search for David Alt. I'm not the vicar, the reverend over in Atlanta.
Not one of your other roles, no.
No, although I do chat to him quite regularly, which is
Yes,
linked by a common name. So yes, please do send emails or get in touch via Twitter. I love hearing from people, and it's one of the great things about voice acting. And in fact, if I could just put a little PS on the end of it. I was so honoured to be in the No Sleep podcast live tour that went across America in February and March this year. There I met with so many wonderful people, the listeners. Mm. And they're lovely. People who listen to audio drama, it's such a friendly, welcoming community.
Mm, it is, isn't it?
And it's... People, I just can't put into words just how lovely everything was. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think this community is one of the warmest and most friendly communities out there.
Absolutely.
So it was a genuine privilege.
And were you doing a stage show of the podcast then as you were touring? Or?
Yes, that's how it was. We had Brandon on the music, and then there were five of us, David Cummings, Nicole Goodnight, Peter Lewis, Jessica McAvoy and myself. Mm-hmm. And we were just the five of us at the front of the stage doing an audio drama script with our sheets of paper in hand, a little bit like the Goon Show was back in the day.
Yeah.
Only not quite as hilariously comically funny. yes, people would sit there and watch us read that. And then we did a few little short stories at the end. So that's how it all worked.
Lovely.
But it was such an honour.
Wonderful. And it's been an honour interviewing you. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Erica Sanderson, and I'm one of the voice actors with the No Sleep podcast, which is a weekly horror fiction anthology show. And my work with No Sleep began in May 2015, and I sort of fell into it by accident and with a very big stroke of luck. My background is predominantly theatre. I trained in acting, musical theatre at the Central School of Speech and Drama in London, and then I spent about 10 years on the road, touring a variety of shows from children's theatre and TIE to classic plays in stately homes and the open air. And at the same time, I was also doing freelance work, doing workshops and tutoring and a little bit of directing and various drama projects with young people and adults as well. What happened was during my late 20s, I met someone and decided to get married and start a family. And of course, zooming off around the country for 6 months on end and living out of a suitcase isn't exactly conducive to family life. So I was on maternity leave and thinking about where I was going to take my career and what I was going to do. And I started to consider strongly the possibility of shifting from, say, regular theatre work and certainly touring into voice work. Voice work is something, it's a field that I've always greatly admired, especially in animation and video games and things like that. And as a kid, I would always play with voices and accents and characters and make up silly voices and telling stories to my kids, you know, reading their bedtime stories. All of the characters have their own very distinctive voices as well. So I was looking at ways to get into the field of voice work. And even now, I still consider myself quite new to the whole genre. And, you know, looking around when you first start, you know, where do you begin? You know, there is, you know, animation, video game, audiobook, narration, documentary, commercial, voice of God, you know, all of these very, very distinctive fields that require a very particular skill set. And I spent a long time sort of umming and ahhing about what was going to be the best way forward. And I happened to be working on a theatre show with a wonderful actor called David Ault, who is also a fellow No Sleep player, and mentioned to him that I was looking at getting into voice work. He very, very kindly put my name forward to David Cummings, the producer of the No Sleep podcast, who sent me a script for another show that he was working on, which, looking back on it, I think that was probably my audition for him. He sent me a script for a show called The Drabblecast, which was audio narration of a first-person narrative verse story, which I duly recorded and sent off to him. And then a few weeks later, I started to get bits from the No Sleep podcast. And from there, it moved on and on. And now I'm very, very lucky to consider myself one of the regular contributors and players to the show. And I absolutely love the niche that I found myself in, which is predominantly providing all of the little odd character parts. You know, several one-liners. I can be doing, you know, several one-liners in different stories, playing anything from child number three to a demonic creature to a very creepy granny hiding under the bed. And I absolutely love it. You know, switching between characters, going backwards and forwards and creating these sort of snapshots in audio drama. I absolutely love it. And I feel very, very privileged that David, especially of the No Sleep, has, you know, taken me on that way and offers me all of these incredible roles that I get to play. So when I come to record, when I get these kind of roles, my sort of warm-up, it takes the... My warm-up kind of goes along the lines of, you know, obviously reading the script. If I'm doing main narration, then I'll read it through a few times to try and get myself familiar with it. And also, you don't want anything like a nasty surprise that the author suddenly gives you about two-thirds of the way through the script, and then you have to go back and redo something. So I always like to be familiar with it. I might try and do a few recordings, a couple of takes, listen back, see if I'm happy with the authorial voice that I'm creating. And then as much as I can, I'll go through it and record and try and do sort of minor editing along the way. And then with the character parts, it depends what I'm being asked to do, really. There have been times where I've researched a particular accent or practiced or done a few takes to kind of tune my own ear into the voice of the character if it seems a bit tricky or something. And then physicality. I'm a great believer in adopting also physicality, because it's not just your voice or how your voice works. It can be affected by how you move, how you breathe, how you're sitting. So for example, if I'm preparing a child, then quite often I'll sit with like one hand under my thigh and do a bit of squirming and try and get into the mentality of being that little awkward 6-year-old. And then if I'm playing an elderly person, There was one granny that I ended up by playing where, you know, hunched my shoulders, you know, collapsed my diaphragm a bit, spent a bit of time, you know, like working my mouth, chewing, trying to get this sort of almost feeling of false teeth or bit of palsy in the side of the face, or talking out of one side of my mouth, just in order to play with sounds and voices. So yeah, that's something that I do occasionally as a warm up. There are lots of things that people recommend. Water, I think, is the be all and end all, really. Just water. Occasionally whiskey if I'm playing that kind of character as well. No, water. Always water. Water beforehand, even water during takes. And that's pretty much it. Sometimes if I'm doing a big narration, I'll do, you know, the general actory warm-ups, working the mouth, you know, forward placement, pushing out my lips, that kind of thing. Maybe a little bit of trilling, and breathing, practicing consonants. I always remember working on open air Shakespeare, and the director would always say, "Bite those consonants, bite them," and it's something that I've always remembered. So to try and make sure that I'm not being lazy in my delivery, because particularly with audio drama, this is the first time that people are hearing your voice, and sometimes it takes a little while to tune in. So I want to make sure that my, you know, my diction and everything is as good as it can be, which I'm probably completely ignoring because I'm trying to do this like a bit like a conversation. So apologies for that. So yeah, that's really sort of my warm up. As throughout predominantly all of my career, really, I'm a freelancer, self-employed freelance. I don't have an agent. If anyone would like to represent me, please do get in touch. You can find me on Twitter. Twitter's actually a great method for networking, I've discovered. I'll get back to that later. But yes, Twitter is amazing, I've discovered, especially in the voice world and horror and podcasting in general as well. Wonderful community out there. But no, I don't have an agent. And again, there are lots of supports out there. With sort of voice representation, and again, it comes back to me feeling a little bit shy, if I'm honest, and a little bit newbie to all of this. I haven't approached anyone like 123 Voices or Voices Pro. I've vaguely in contact with the good folks over at Gravy from the Brain and also the Voiceover Network, and I found, you know, if I've had a question or you know, want to ask them something, I've, you know, fired off an email or something, and they've been really generous and very, very helpful and very responsive and very, very lovely. The other thing is, you know, coming back to how I ended up by doing this in the first place is family and time. I think I started a free trial with Voices Pro and was unable to even look through the free listings of the day when you're chasing after two toddlers. So finding the time and being disciplined is certainly something to move forward. But I'm in no rush. I'm enjoying learning my craft, shall we say. I'm very much enjoying learning my craft and learning how the industry works, which brings me back to, again, Twitter. And that's really been a big networking surprise for me personally. It's how I was approached to be on here. And also, there are lots of other projects where I've now been approached through Twitter or people who've heard me on the podcast, and that's been wonderful, and that's a real learning curve, and it's really sort of opening my eyes up to the whole range of fantastic voice work that is out there in a very wide variety of fields. So while I don't have an agent, I am a member of Equity and I am on Spotlight. I remember feeling very proud when I got my equity card back in my student days. And over the years, I have found them to be very useful resources and tools, and also a very good support network as well. And I think that's important. You do need as much support as you can get, because especially when you're recording, you can tend to feel quite isolated and alone. You know, I first started doing voice work, I was recording by myself in a small corner of my house with a duvet over a clothes horse. And, you know, time has gone on, and I've been able to invest in a little bit more equipment. So the duvet has gone. And I can now put my own washing back on my clothes horse. And I've got a couple of like sound booth panels in here. And yeah, it just all goes into a little Focusrite box into the computer. So that's my audio setup. Very basic, but does me well, I hope. And especially considering that I'm hoping to take this further and do more, as well as No Sleep, I've been offered a couple of cameos in some upcoming podcasts, which I'm looking forward to being released later on in the year. And last year I did a small video game work for an expansion pack for a new downloadable mission. So more video games, more podcasting, more audio drama. I think I would love to do animation as well. I would really love to do voice work for animation. And anything to do with Star Wars. I'm a huge fan. So anything that's set in a galaxy far, far away, I am there. In fact, I'm very lucky that that's actually my day job as well, is I work for a company that sells Star Wars toys and costumes. So juggling the whole thing with, you know, voice work and family life and the day job, it can be interesting at times, but it's a wonderful, happy adventure to be on. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Thank you very, very much to Sarah for inviting me to talk to you. If voice work is something that you're considering, then do be brave. There is support out there. As I say, be brave, start talking to people, see what's out there, and have fun and enjoy. So thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. Today we have the amazing Beth Eyre with us.
Hello, Beth.
Hello.
And yeah, we're just going to fathom how amazing your experiences have been so far in voice acting, and if you can give our listeners any amazing insights into what they can do to try and be as awesome as you.
First of all, yeah, what are your current projects that you're in, and what are ones that you've been in, and what are your favourites so far?
Hello everyone, I'm Beth Eyre, and I play Antigone Funn in the podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats. We are in between season 2 and 3 at the moment. It's about two rival funeral directors on a Channel Island, and I play Antigone, the mortician, who is quite shy and frustrated and finds life quite difficult, but hopefully in a very funny and entertaining way. And it's part of a lovely mishmash of many sort of wonderful and colourful characters, and do check it out if you haven't yet. I've got a few other things going on at the moment you can catch me in. I'm in an episode of Beef and Dairy, which is wonderful and very fantastic show that's now getting some of its episodes aired on BBC, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I appear in episode 3 of the Unseen Hour podcast, which is a new sort of comedy horror show, which is really exciting, and it's live record. If you want to sort of look at anything else I'm doing, I'm in Hector vs. the Future as Mayor Pinch, who's the complete opposite of Antigone. Yes. It's another live record, which is really fun. And I'm also really lucky to be in Greater Boston, a brilliant US show at the moment.
Yes, Autumn
West, yeah. Mm. It's I love Greater Boston. It's a really fantastic show, actually, to be part of. So, yeah, I've got a few things if you are waiting for more Wooden Overcoats and want to check out other stuff going on.
Lots going on. I'm not surprised. So regards to sort of how you started, what kind of acting training have you had to get to this point?
So I hadn't had much training before I went to university. I was part of National Youth Theatre, which was a great thing to be part of.
Amazing.
Back in 2006. And then after that, I trained on a two-year course at Drama Studio London, which is where I met Felix Trench, which is one of those sort of things that has had quite a big effect on me. But it's a sort of classical training, really good training in stage, which is something that I was really keen to be involved in, still very much am. I had a master's degree in Shakespeare before I trained, and Shakespeare kind of been one of my things. But they also had a fantastic sort of radio training. I've always kind of loved audio. When I was a kid, we moved around a lot. We seemed to spend most of my childhood driving to different parts of the country, and I had my Walkman, and we sort of had audio tapes and audio dramatisations. Sort of Joanna Lumley reads 101 Dalmatians and fantastic dramatisations of Narnia, and it was a real constant. And then you had sort of things like Roald Dahl, Dirty Beasts, and
Staple
of
Scales,
things like that. And I don't know, it always seemed like a wonderful way of telling stories, and I think it sort of affected how I approached acting and how I sort of managed to hear scripts when I came to them later in life. So it's something I always wanted to do. And then at Drama Studio, its whole thing is that they kind of have people from the profession training you to be in the profession, which is really nice. And we had Judy Bond, who's a lovely actress who's done a huge number of audiobooks, and Che Cookson, who still works for the BBC and does a lot with wireless theatre, and a guy called Simon Mattox, who does a huge amount of voiceover, and also he does cartoons and stuff. I think he's an Angelina
ballerina.
So you're kind of getting a look at audiobooks, look at audio drama, and the sort of commercial world beyond that, which I really loved. And then when I left school, you sort of think, okay, so it's all this stuff out there, and I really wanted to be part of it, and you sort of think, oh, how am I going to do that? It was a few years ago, and so I sort of tried various things to try and get involved. I was a runner on a BBC Three drama called The Physicists, that Tom Tuck was in. That
I love him.
I know, where he's in the overcoats.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of him, sort of in the corner being this runner, and I had to read in for lines for characters who weren't there, and the director left like one word I said in the final production. I was like, yeah, I'm on the radio. And then I worked with the Wireless Theatre Company and did a few shows with them, which was really good fun. They're lovely with actors, really nice to work with, and get some brilliant directors involved. And I set up my own radio company to try and do audio, and did little bits online and things like that. And at the same time, Felix, who also loved audio, was kind of creating his own work and had his own company going, and asked me if I wanted to be involved in a series of Sophocles productions, including a production of Antigone. He said, do you want to play Antigone? And so we recorded that on location, which was really beautiful.
Is that still available to find?
You know, it actually isn't. It's one of those irritating things. It's not quite been produced yet, but maybe one day. I think it'd be really beautiful if it was. He sort of got in touch one day and said that a friend of his was directing a version of another friend's comedy sitcom, comedy adventure series, I suppose, and if anyone wanted to be involved in that, to write in. And it's one of those sort of times where you could so easily have sort of thought, oh, I won't get this, or can't fit it in, and I did, and the writer turned out to be David K. Barnes.
Right.
And Wooden Overcoats came along after that, and a series of David's plays, and so I guess things started going in that direction from that point, and that we all sort of came together to work on this series that was very exciting, that Felix and David had sort of talked about. And
you played a baddie in that one, didn't you?
In Drayton Trench, I was, sort of vampire. It was great. And did a whole load of different comedy voices, so I think they liked that and remembered it. And then one day Felix sort of rang up and said, David's writing this other thing, do you want to play my twin sister? She's a mortician. And I said, oh, of course. That sounds great. And we did the first read through of the first and fourth episode, which David had written. He sort of said he'd written it with me in mind, which was kind of amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and also sort of slightly disturbing. Hadn't met that many times at that stage, and sort of sapped certain things that I have and put them in the script in this really alarming way. But it was great fun, and it sort of went from there, I suppose.
Fantastic.
Asking about the actual physical acting, when you start, how do you warm up before a recording, and are there any kind of tips that you can give Is there anything you drink or eat or exercises?
Technical things. I think it's sort of different for everybody. I think tongue twisters, vocal exercises can be really useful, sort of anything that gets your mouth working, especially if there's anything you know that you struggle with. Drinking water is a really good idea, and not being hungover is a really good idea. It's just one of those things, like with anything else, you just throws your reactions off a bit. So I think it's really useful to eat something before, because stomach rumbles really are a thing.
Yes.
We find that bananas and sort of apples, that sort of thing, can help to keep you not hungry without sort of making anything too claggy. Mm-hmm. It's always good to have some water on hand. One thing that I do is I think it can be really helpful, as well as doing sort of general vocal warm-ups where you're doing tongue twisters, to just sort of practice saying the words. It's not that glamorous, but it's sort of, especially in overcoats, there are some times where things that I'm saying are fast, or where you feel the writers have deliberately put in something that's very tongue twistery to say. And I think it's a bit like, or like dancing, like a sort of routine in a way. It's muscle memory. If you sort of said the words recently, you stand a better chance of being able to say them in the right order. I find that on stage as well, if you have 2 days out from a show, the chances are you come back and you'll make a mistake if you haven't said the words the day before. And it's a bit sort of technical, but I think it does help. And also then it means you're free to do whatever you want with them. You're not necessarily going to say them the same way over and over, but your mouth is used to forming those sounds.
And how much work do you do on a script actually before the first run through? So you're saying about like becoming familiar with them, but do you mark up your script, or what extra things you do before you come to record?
I definitely mark up the scripts. It's so helpful to be able to see what you're doing, because it's unlike theatre. You are reading the thing, so you really need to be able to sort of have flags through the pages. So I mark up the scripts. I sort of draw quite big, I suppose, almost as if you would on music, sort of, if I think a picture would be loud or going faster, I'll draw big arrows or sort of any bits where I think that is sort of, you need to emphasise that word in a particular way, and then kind of riff on it from there. But I think it can be really helpful to do that, and just to be as familiar with the script as possible. It's the best way of sort of getting to know the character, and it's with the idea that then when you get into the studio you can be really free with it. But sometimes you pick up a script and you kind of instantly have an idea of how you think it should go.
That's the thing, is like how to find that specific voice. So does it come directly from just what you do, or has someone got a specific thing in mind and says, I'm aiming for that?
Well, I think it varies. For me, it really varies script to script. Sometimes you instantly think you know what you're doing, and sometimes you have to think, what voice should this be? With overcoats, I guess partly because David was thinking of me, they sort of said, do it in your own voice. And there's quite a lot of that on overcoats. I think for all that it's quite outlandish, people want there to be sort of a natural realness to it. But me, I knew it would help if I at least feel she has a different voice to me. It's sort of breathier, it's faster, it's sort of
intense.
It's sort of an intensity and a breathiness that I don't really have naturally. And that helped me to just see her as separate to me, and that is really helpful for me, because if I'm thinking it's me all the time, it's you can't really
thought process,
exactly. It's much easier to sort of think I'm like this and she's like that, and then and then you're sort of free to go and do that. And then sometimes people want something specific, and you can sort of tweak and experiment with different things. I love it when you can hear it instantly, but I think if you can't, there are different ways of approaching that. You can sort of try and figure out what you know about the character from the script, what their relationships with other people are, what their sort of status is like, and and then it's audio, so it can be great fun to be able to
play
play with different voices, to cope them with something that you might not normally be able to do. It's very, very good fun.
And with all that, do you find there's a lot of, obviously you've worked with different groups of people, but is there quite a lot of input from the directors and producers into what you're doing, or kind of how do you feel about working with them too?
John and Andy, who direct with Novacos, are really wonderful to work with. They tend to have one of them in the room and one of them in the box, so sort of one person who can see what's going on and anything we might be struggling with, and one person who can tell us what it's actually sounding like. I think they both have a really, really good feel for the scripts, and they're very good at sort of moving you in direction if something isn't quite landing right. And also, if we're sort of pushed for time, being quite specific, just like, just do this, because at the moment it sounds like that. We always have read-throughs before we start the day as a full cast, which I find is pretty unusual. I mean,
luxury.
I know. Yeah, I mean, the time on the BBC, it's often sort of straight in, or sort of sometimes the more money that is involved, the less rehearsing there is. And I think having a moment where you can actually look at the other actors and all share what the story is. One, it's very motivating because you're all sort of on the same page, and two, you just feel the relationships more. But John and Andy sort of take that as a draft, and then they'll sort of tell you anything particularly they want you to look after in the scene. They're both absolutely lovely to work with.
Mm. And how do you find new work? So you've been working on these other bits and pieces. So how are you marketing yourself, would you say, as a voice actor?
So new work-wise, it varies. Sometimes people have approached me, which is absolutely glorious. And sometimes As you were saying earlier, the audio drama community online is so sort of supportive, and I think everyone's increasingly aware of each other's work.
Yes.
So sometimes I try and listen to as many podcasts as I can. There's so much out there that's great. And
oh, it's flooded, Mark.
I know, it is. Wonderful. Playlist is backed up. Mm-hmm. I sort of tell people when I like their stuff, and if I sort of think it's feasible, a sort of show where they might be looking for new people, I often just write to them and say, if you ever want anybody, I'm around. And that does seem to have quite a high success rate, which is lovely. And I think the thing is not to think that you're ever bothering people.
Okay.
Because it's really nice to hear that somebody likes your work.
Yeah.
And if they haven't got anything for you, then no one's hurt by it. And it's just really nice to hear that somebody is out there listening, possibly across the world, and enjoying what you're making, and maybe something will come of it. And if not, maybe you've just made a connection that will be interesting in the future.
Yeah, communication is key.
Yep. Do you have another job around your voice work and your theatre work? Or
yeah, I certainly do. So I work a bar in front of house in a couple of theatres. I'm working at the Hope Theatre tonight. And I tutor. My degrees are English, and so I tutor GCSE English, which is ever so busy at the moment.
Okay, lucky students.
They'll all be gone in 6 weeks, and I shall be once again thinking, what shall I do now? But I really like working with teenagers. It's it's good fun. I never really know if I'm getting the balance right. I think in this industry, it's always sort of you need enough time to be able to promote yourself and to be able to be available for any acting work that comes along, but also enough money to be able to keep doing it. So
exactly.
I don't know. I've had various jobs. I've sort of worked in shoe shops and worked as a waitress and worked on bar, and I do this thing where you medical role play, where you sort of you sort of turn up and pretend to be a patient, and trainee doctors diagnose you, which is great for them because they haven't worked with the public before, so they're sort of wanting to be lots of different ways of making money around acting work. It's kind of interesting.
Fantastic. And in regards to sort of marketing yourself as well, how actively do you do that for your own work? Because I find personally that voice acting is quite an insular thing sometimes, and obviously the companies that you work with are promoting their stuff, but how much do you do?
So I guess I mainly promote my work on Twitter. I like Twitter. I think it's sort of a lovely way of keeping in touch with people. I guess I'm most on top of that. And Facebook as well, I suppose that's sort of more people you're already very much in a network with, so it's kind of different to see how different things come up. I'm kind of getting to grips with Instagram. sort of internet dependent. I mean, Wooden Overcoats has kind of been sort of a product that's gone out on the internet and promotes itself on Tumblr and Instagram and all those sort of things, which I'm part of doing. And I think that it's lovely that we have a medium that is available for free on the internet and that you promote on the internet, and it sort of it complements it really well in a way. With theatre, which I also produce for you, sort of you're telling people online to go and buy a ticket, where you're sort of telling people to listen to this thing for free. It's a sort of more immediate thing, which is really nice.
So we were talking earlier about communicating and how many people kind of communicate back to you. Do you get a lot of fan
We certainly do get some. We get people sort of writing in sometimes, which is really lovely. We occasionally get letters. We had a girl who's made us little badges, which is lovely, and sort of written to us. And you do sometimes get people writing the most extraordinary times. It's always really surprising to say that they've kind of loved the show or that it's really meant something to them. It's a comedy show, and I love that. I think comedy is such a wonderful thing to do. Yeah. It's sort of so important to have something that is just good fun.
Escapist fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's also lovely to hear that people sort of surprise me sometimes that the characters really meant something to them. I think that comes down to our wonderful team of writers, that they, for all that they are sort of part of a slightly different world, they are very real. They're sort of parts that you don't necessarily get other places. And
yes.
People, for me, I love about Antigone that she, I don't know, she finds life very tricky, but she is also desperate to be independent, and she sort of finds men very frightening and has a lot of issues with her sexuality, and I think that's something that hasn't been explored that much.
Yes.
And comedy's a lovely way of exploring it, and I think there's lots of cases of sort of seeing an awkward man try and deal with sexuality, but to see a sort of woman do that,
we just want Antigone to be happy.
Exactly.
That's like,
yes.
Come on. It's going to happen. No, it's not. And then ripped away from life. But no, it is very exciting. Yeah, and there's lots of devices there, I think, that make people fall in love with those characters and really want to know, what's going to happen next. And it's just waiting for that next series. Who's going to do this?
Exactly. And it's like you say, it's hilariously funny, but it is really touching. And even if you took all the jokes out, it would actually make quite a nice drama in itself. You know, you would still care about the characters.
I think so. I think they're all lovely. I think they've got a terrific sort of supporting cast.
Yes.
I'm a fan of Agatha Doyle. I just want more.
Finally, are there any vocal training courses that you've particularly found to be useful that some of our listeners are just basically starting out? Mm-hmm. So would you have any tips or advice for them to follow?
Well, I suppose I think I still am a massive sort of fan of their drama school training, with one that has a sort of good radio programme. I expect many of them do. RADA offers workshops where you can just go for a weekend with various voice coaches. I'm also a member of the Actors Guild, where they do a huge range of workshops, including voice workshops, and for all different kinds of things. So if you ever sort of want to just have a general voice session or have a personal voice session, or if they have a sort of Northern accents, Yorkshire and Lancashire, what's different about them? So if there's anything coming up where you think, I need to brush up my American accent, or they have a workshop for that. Wireless Theatre Company do radio workshops generally, which are really good if you're sort of starting out, sort of things to prepare you for being a voice actor, and give you a little chance to perform in front of people, which is, I think, a really good idea. So, there's a few different things you can check out if you're starting out that could be really useful places to start. And also, every time you do, just remember that you're meeting people in the industry, that you can keep in touch with them, that they are usually very friendly and happy to answer questions, and that can be invaluable. So just go for it.
Cool. So you would recommend people to become a voice actor, do you think?
I certainly would, absolutely. I think it's wonderful. I think the podcast industry is kind of exploding at the moment. It's still something where people outside the industry, you can still slightly sort of see people occasionally glaze over when you say podcast, but they are wrong. And it's such an exciting time to be doing this, and it's something where a huge amount of people are doing really fascinating work that you can get involved in by asking and exploring, and or if not, get a mic and make your own. I feel like that about the entire industry. Sort of, don't wait for it to come to you. It's now at a stage where it's not too difficult to find out from other people how you go about recording your own stuff. If you've got an idea, get it out there. I really like that about podcasts. It seems to sort of take some of the barriers away. It can be a lot cheaper than trying to make a film or trying to get a show on. It's not sort of, it's just a sort of cheap. You can create a really beautiful personal end project, which you can sort of bring a lot of your own personality to. And there are podcasts about so many obscure things. Maybe mm-hmm. you have something that's really very interesting to you and a group of people you're aware of that yes. nobody has thought of doing yet. Maybe
find
you should
tribe.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe you should be doing that because mm-hmm. you know there's a podcast for that, or there should be a podcast for that. Mm. Equally, if you have a look, if you've got a special interest, it might be out there already. And I don't know. I think that's really lovely. All these corners of the internet mm-hmm. To explore or to create something new.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And where can we find you? Where, if someone was a fan or didn't know of you, where could they find stuff about you?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Beth Eyre. I'm also on Facebook. If you want to keep in touch with Wooden Overcoats, our website is woodenovercoats.com, and we're on Twitter at Overcoats Wooden and on Facebook. Do check out the podcast if you hadn't already. It's really good fun.
Marvellous.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time and all your tips and advice. It's brilliant.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Well, I've learned so many amazing things from all of those amazingly fantastically talented people, and thank you so much for sharing your time just to talk to us and to give all that brilliant gems of information for future voice actors.
It was a real joy interviewing both Beth and David, and it was lovely to hear from Erica as well, so thank you so much. If you enjoyed listening to the contributions and you'd like to comment, do always contact us at our email address.
Yes, which is you do it.
podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Ba-ding. And we have, again, some fantastic information for you regarding your hosting sites. There's a brilliant article on podcast host on Libsyn versus Blueberry, Blubrry. Where should I host my podcast? So if you're somebody who's completing one, nearly done and not sure where to host, have a little look, see on the www.podcasthost.com site
yep.
and have a little browse. Should help you out somewhat.
And also for anyone hopping maybe to another one.
Yes, I think the only other things to say is if you are somebody who's considering voice acting, just get your reel together,
yes.
folks. Get out there and share it. If not for me, for Dirty Dan and his little dog. Now, what did you say?
Dog?
I don't know what that was about.
I don't know
who Dirty Dan is or his dog, but just go and do it for them.
Yes.
Darn it.
And talking of doing things for people, thank you so much to our Patreons who do things for us by sponsoring us. And we have something very special for our Patreons coming up. In following episodes, we are going to be featuring trailers provided by our Patreons. So if you are a Patreon, or you would like to be, and you want to send us your trailers, please do. And we would be ever so happy to put them in at the end of this podcast.
Grand.
Hopefully that way that'll be good to introduce listeners to this who perhaps haven't yet heard your podcast, and it's the very least we can do in return.
Ah, yes, huge thank yous to everyone involved in that. Mm-hmm. And please do keep communicating. As we've said earlier, the best way to find out information is to ask somebody.
Yes.
Other than using some kind of search engine of your choice, use the search engine of someone's brain. Yes, please do contact us on our forums on Facebook or on Twitter at Yep Audio. And we'd love to hear your feedback on any of our shows and hope they've been useful to you.
Mm.
In 2 weeks' time, we have our amazing new podcast, also on voice acting, continuing with some wonderful interviews with people who you might know from Wolf359, from WTF Frequency.
Do tune in then. To hear some more. Thank you so much for listening.
Hooray! Have a lovely day. Bye bye.
Bye bye.